We've heard the statistics about the rise of the nuns, the people who are young and leaving the church. Steve Argue believes that there are things churches could do that would cause young people to be more interested in what's going on there.
I don't think that young people necessarily want to just volunteer for some prefab program in the church. A lot of them are entrepreneurs. They say, I see a pain in the world. I want to express my faith through the gifts that I have. How can I use that? And I think as churches, we can maybe rally our resources and kind of say, is there any way we can help these entrepreneurs actually develop their ideas? I know they're all not going to work, but can we take a risk with them?
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. You'll find us online at familylifetoday.com. We're going to talk today about what churches and parents can do to help their sons and daughters stay better connected to faith and to the local church. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You know, 2 weeks from today, it's a new year. Do you think about that? We are 2 weeks away from 2020.
Where did 2019 go?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did it just fly by? I mean, next Wednesday is Christmas.
That's right. And the next 2 weeks for us here at Family Life are pretty important. And it's the same at your church, right?
It's exactly the same. And I don't know if people understand that, but the last couple weeks, almost a third of our budget will come in terms of donations as people are doing the same thing we're doing. We're thinking year end. What ministries do I believe in and trust, and what do I want to see grow and thrive in 2020? And so our church has that, and Family Life has the same thing. If you give here, you can assure that you can continue to hear this radio program, podcast, content will be developed, and it's a critical time to make a hard decision and a beautiful decision and impact people's lives. And so we're asking you, challenging you to say, join us.
Well, I think, too, this time of year can be really stressful. I know as a mom and a wife, I'm engulfed in all the details of Christmas.
Right.
And sometimes it's hard to slow down, remember what the Christmas season is really all about. It's about Jesus, but also the things that really matter. Family and family life is something I think that really matters to us because we're impacting generations for the gospel and for family.
Well, and we're hoping this month to be able to take full advantage of a matching gift that has been made available to us. Every donation we receive during the month of December is being matched dollar for dollar. We've not yet met the match, and so we're asking Family Life Today listeners, would you make a year-end contribution? Do it today. Go to familylifetoday.com, donate online, call 1-800-FL-TODAY to make a donation, and help us continue to impact lives and marriages and families all around the world in the year ahead. And we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for your support in the past and for what you're able to do today. You know, every so often I will go to Twitter and type in the hashtag adulting and just see what pops up, you know. So I've got it right here. You know you're getting into peak adulting when you're shopping around and researching every single energy provider and pricing. You have dinner with friends to consult on this matter as if your life depended upon it. Still looking for recommendations, though, the person says. Or trying to decide between three different lampshades has been causing me a great amount of anxiety. I guess this is what it means to be an adult. We're talking about how we as parents can help our kids transition into the adulting years. And we've got Steve Argue joining us this week to help us with this. Steve, welcome back.
Thanks so much. Good to be with you.
Steve is a part of the Fuller Youth Institute at Fuller Theological Seminary. He's an associate professor, and together with his colleague, Kara Powell, they've written a book called Growing With. And I'm just wondering about that term. Do young people embrace the term adulting, or do they find that condescending when it's used?
No, we actually use the term adulting. That's of the three verbs, withing, faithing, and adulting. That's the one we didn't make up. That's been around actually for quite a while. And it actually was adopted likely from millennials or those in their 20s, because I think this is something that they're trying to figure out. Now, think about this for a 20-something. This idea of becoming an adult is very, very vague in our world. It used to be 18, you're sort of a legal adult, kind of go live your life. But I think in our society, it's just more vague as to what we mean by that. Am I an adult when I'm 18 or when I'm 21 when I can drink, or 25 when I can rent a car? Some research online, and if you were to ask people, like adults in society, like when does one become an adult? A lot of times people will say, well, it's in their late 20s, but it's very ambiguous. So what you have is you have a bunch of people in their 20s that are trying to figure out when I am a contributing member of society. When is that rite of passage actually happening? Mm. And what does that actually look at like? Because when we think about this idea of rite of passage, it's not just someone saying you're an adult. It actually is followed up by being treated as an adult and treated as an equal. So there are a lot of mixed signals associated with that. On top of that, we find that probably in past generations, there were also some markers that would define adulthood. Marriage, a full-time paid job, perhaps living in a place or residence or something like that. But the research on young emerging adults is suggesting that that's not really the markers for them anymore. They're looking for something completely different. And so for them, it's really things like making decisions on their own and owning those decisions. It's also being financially independent, which is really, really interesting. So think about this for a second. In the past, perhaps in our generation, if you had a peer that said, hey, I'm moving back home to live in my parents' basement, we would equate that with an adulting fail.
Loser.
Loser, right? Really, yeah. You're in the basement, mm-hmm. right? But what we're finding is that almost up to half of those in their 20s are actually moving back home to live with their own parents. Now, if we use a lens of past generations, we would call them
losers.
Right. But if an adulting goal for an emerging adult is to actually become financially independent,
right.
what's actually happening is we've got young people moving back home so that they can save money, so that they can become independent. So the move back home for this generation is an adulting fail. It's actually a step toward adulting. Interesting,
so,
right?
So if I'm that parent.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to respond to that? Because I'm that parent that would say, no, you're not coming back home living in the basement and mooching off of me.
Yeah.
Become an adult, get a job. But
and yet also,
is it different now?
This generation is coming out of college with a lot of college
debt, college
which debt. Has never been to
right.
at this point.
Right. So you have college debt. You have a hard time finding that full-time job. You're trying to somehow get the debt down. And at the same time, I think you have a very real dynamic that you mentioned of, okay, so they're going to come home. So how long are they going to be here?
Right.
Now, obviously, it's at this point where in a radio broadcast, we can only go so far in the sense that I think it's going to be different for every child, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even our own children are so different under our household. So I think for some, we probably have to say, I don't know if that's such a good idea for you to come home. And for others, like, okay, why don't you do it for a little bit? But I think it's in those moments that as a parent, we have to recognize the fact that when they come home, they're not coming home as teenagers anymore.
Right.
They're coming home as explorers or focusers. And so therefore, we have to name the relationship that we have with them and talk about what it means for them to be home.
Well, what I hear you saying is diagnose why are they coming home.
Yep.
If they're coming home so that they can freeload, so that they can spend money foolishly, then in that case, you say, no, I'm not going to enable this ongoing adolescent behavior. But if they're coming home and it's so that they can make some wise choices and pay off debt so that they can be financially independent, I mean, what 25-year-old is going, you know, I hope when I'm 25, I can move back in with mom and dad, right?
Right.
Nobody wants to do that. So if they're doing it, it's either because they want to perpetuate their adolescence or they want to move into adulthood.
Yep.
You have to diagnose which is at play here and then respond appropriately.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think when we do that, I think we can sort of unpack this and we have a better chance of really helping them sort of navigate their way forward with adulting. And so this adulting, as we talk about it in the book, really has two aspects to it as well. So adulting is obviously these major maybe goals that a young person has, but we talk about this idea of relational adulting and vocational adulting. So when we think about this idea of relational adulting, we're really trying, I think, as parents to help our kids understand and navigate, well, what are the other relationships in their lives that they're beginning to cultivate? What does it mean to have a life partner or to be part of a community outside the one that they grew up in? These are, again, new things for them that they're trying to understand and unpack. And so this idea of relationships, which is very, very important to a 20-something, is something that they are trying to really think through. And so that's going to be high on their list of trying to figure out. And then also, this idea of vocational adulting is just this idea of what am I giving my life to? What am I investing in? And the benefit of it is this, is that I think young people have more options than ever to do amazing things. You know, there's not sort of the three couple of jobs that a guy can do, or back in the day, even less opportunity for women. What we see is this opportunity for all young people to really step into their gifts and passions that they have. And so there's something really exciting about that, but there is a shadow side. And the shadow side is that there's a lot of anxiety that young people feel. Because I'm asked at age 18 to declare my major of what I want to do for the rest of my life, and what if I change that? What does that do?
Yeah.
Or I want to be an engineer. Well, what kind of engineer? Or, like, I think I'm good with computers, but it doesn't fit in a nice, neat path anymore. I'm even seeing this with the graduate students that I work with at our seminary, that a lot of them are coming wanting theological education, but when I say, well, what's the calling? What do you want to do with that? A lot of them aren't saying, I just want to go be an associate pastor. Some do, but others are like, you know, I think I want to do something with microfinance. I think what I want to do is help the poor in an urban context in this particular area, because I feel like I'm using my language and my faith to try to do something with that. Do you know of a job? I'm like, I don't know of a job, right? I mean, so the opportunities are amazing, but it also is requiring a lot more discernment and thinking associated with what that calling is. As a matter of fact, in our school at Fuller, we not only are teaching these courses, but we're have worked into the curriculum this idea of vocational discernment and formation. What is God calling me to? What does it mean for me to be a whole person as I step into these areas of passion? And what does that begin to look like? The other thing I'll say about that is this, is that there's some research that would suggest that people in their 20s kind of get the wrong message. They think that somehow their 20s is an extended adolescence, that I really just have more time to grow up. And when that begins to happen, I think that young people sometimes don't make intentional choices about how they're using their lives. And as one researcher said in her work, she said, I was counseling young people in their 30s who said, I had a better resume at 20 than I did at 30. Hmm. And I think they bought into this idea that if I just kind of, you know, tried this over here or tried this over here, it'll eventually work out. But the way I think we need to think about it is this, is that the third decade of life is really a decade of investment. Then maybe it's going to take longer to grow up, to get to that adult state, or to actually be adulting. But as long as you're investing in yourself along the way, in education, in relationships, in things that really are the things that you want to give your life to, you want to think about, well, what do you want to become at 30 and beyond, and how do I begin to make those choices now? And I think as parents, and I think as mentors and as pastors, those are the conversations that young people really want to have.
You know, we've talked a lot about relational realities during these years. We've talked about practical realities and navigating the issues of life. I keep coming back, though, to what's most important to me as a parent, and that is the faith realities. So if I've got a son or a daughter who in college or in their early adult years has made church not a priority anymore, they're just not going to church, or spiritual disciplines are not a part of what they're doing, or they say things like, yeah, you know, that's right now, that's not important to me. Yeah. As a parent, that's very concerning for me.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you may be doing well in your career, you may be doing well in relationships, you may be doing well in all these other things. If that's not doing well, I'm concerned about the trajectory of your life. Can we do anything as parents when our 20-something kids are off in the wilderness spiritually?
Absolutely. So a couple of things I think we have to keep in mind, and this comes back to some empathy that we've talked about before, is that for a young person in their 20s, while faith is a piece of maybe what they've grown up with or is important to them in some ways, these other forces of trying to adult, trying to find community or relationships actually are the felt need. So they kind of come first, whether we like it or not. I think that's part of it. So I don't think that means that faith is second or third or doesn't matter, but I think that the felt need sometimes leads in a direction where young people are thinking about those more than anything else. But eventually what begins to happen is that the faith and faith in component begins to become more important again, because all of a sudden they start to go, well, by what grid am I making any decisions?
Right.
Like, what is right and wrong for me or for others? And what does that begin to look like? So there's a couple things that we've realized through our own research and others that is sort of interesting. First of all, is that I think that some adults think like, well, eventually when you have kids and you settle down, you'll come back to church. We're finding that's not necessarily the case anymore. Mm-hmm. Or if it is, we just recognize that because everyone's getting married or having children later in life, a young person could be out of the church for almost a full decade. So the church that they come back to is not the same church that they left. So it's all new for them all over again. So I think we just have to recognize the fact that there sometimes can be a gap there that we have to address. As I think about young people and churches, and I think about this as a researcher, but I also think about this as a former pastor as well. If we were to apply growing with to that relationship, there's a couple things that I'd say. First of all, I think we have to take seriously the type of relationship we hope young people have with the church and the church has with young people. An example that I use is this idea of the DTR, the defining the relationship. I don't know if like when you were growing up, if you ever dated and you kind of got serious with somebody and you kind of got to that moment where you had to decide, okay, who are we together? Is this going to go forward? Or are we going to just call the ball and we're sort of done? What I find in a lot of ministries is that the DTR is quite clearly defined in children's ministry. I'm a child. I go to this class. There's an adult that loves me. I do the lesson and I go home. In the teenage years, middle school, high school, it's also much more developed than it ever has been before. I go to youth group. There's an adult that's my mentor, a small group leader that cares for me. There's this room they call the youth room. I kind of have a place, and that's really, really great. But for the 18 plus, for the emerging adult, for the explorer or the focuser, I think what we're finding is that the structures in our churches don't leave a lot of room for them unless I'm married or unless I have children. So where is the space for a 23-year-old graduate student woman who just moved in from out of town and came to church and there's nothing for her? When the pastor always talks about their family and living in a certain part of town and those are always the applications, you can see what happens really quickly. The subliminal message, the real message is, we don't know what to do with you. Mm. So in that moment, you have young people that don't really feel welcome. Now, I know that the website says we're welcome. Y'all welcome, right? But young people can sniff it a mile away. And I think they want to know is where I'm at as a single person in the field that I'm in doing what I'm doing. Is that okay? Can I use my gifts here? Can I be in relationships with a community
and
here?
Does their faith look different? And are they longing for different things besides the gospel?
Yeah.
You know, what's that look like
today? I think they're longing for community. And I think what they're also, a lot of them are longing for is a couple things. One is, I don't think that young people necessarily want to just volunteer for some prefab program in the church. It doesn't mean that there aren't some people that are going to love children's ministry or youth ministry, which is usually where we're like, oh, you're single. You'd be great. You know, youth. A lot of them are entrepreneurs. They say, I see a pain in the world. I want to express my faith through the gifts that I have. How can I use that? And I think as churches, we can maybe rally our resources and kind of say, is there any way we can help these entrepreneurs actually develop their ideas? I know they're all not going to work, but can we take a risk with them? As a 20-something, I'm in business. What does it mean for me to be a Christian businessman in a world where I'm having to make moral choices every day? You know what I need? I don't need a singles ministry. I need a business mentor. And as I think about these things, I wonder if there's an institution in the world that's intergenerational that actually has been committed to young people and has all this wealth of life experience and resources that could invest in young people. I wonder if there's anything like that out there. That's the church. Like, the church is like, oh, young people are leaving and, you know, I'm kind of like, if we can actually attend to the spaces where they are looking to develop and grow and express their faith beyond the prefab programs that we have for our churches, I think young people would be lining up outside our churches because they're looking for someone to believe in them and invest in them. And so that's my hope for the church. It's not a critique. That's just or a lament. It's more of a hope. Like, we've got great news. We've got great people. And I think that we are all longing to figure out ways to invest in these young people. And I think if we do that, I think that not only will young people be blessed, but I think our church will be blessed as well. And that's, to me, incredibly exciting. So that's my hope for that. I do think there's another side to this, and I do want to address this as well, is that, and you know, Bob, I think you brought this up a little bit, is I do think that as young people leave the church, in some research done with college students, we do find this, that some questions that are raised that young people have and they bring back to their churches aren't necessarily received very well. The church doesn't have the capacity to really ask maybe some of the deep-seated questions that they have. And it's in that moment, I think.
Like what? Give me an example.
The existence of God, how we integrate science and faith, how we think about sexuality, war, immigration. I mean, all the top issues that, you know, are swirling around, right? These are the topics that this generation doesn't have the luxury to ignore. These are their generation questions. Like, right. We had ours in our generations that were similar but different, and so these are coming. I think what happens is that when young people bring those questions and their friends with those questions to church, and there isn't the space to talk about it, I think sometimes they actually have to say, we've got to leave you. And the leaving isn't out of protest, and the leaving isn't out of disrespect, or even not out of disappreciation or unappreciation. They're actually saying, look, I have a choice. I can sit here and not talk about these things and die on the inside, or I'm going to have to go somewhere where I can begin to work those things out. And I have to say that in some of the work that I've done, this is a really vulnerable space for those in their 20s to actually admit that they may have to move away from the community that they may feel a sense of familiarity to is really, really difficult. And sometimes the only answer they hear from the community and from pastors is, well, why'd you leave us?
Yeah.
Think about the insult to injury that brings to a vulnerable person that's just trying to ask these questions. And so as a church, and I think as families, we have to be courageous to say, how do we begin to entertain these questions? And I think from a parent perspective, I mean, one of the things that we've been talking with parents a lot about is that I think it's okay for parents to not have all the answers. I can say, I don't know, but. Like, those are great four words. Like, if you could start, like, a lot of your answers with that, that would be great. Like, I don't know, but... tell me more about why that's such an important topic for you.
Let's discuss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, but let's figure it out together. The job of us as leaders and parents isn't to just answer all their questions as though, you know, they're sitting back going, okay, so how about this one? It's actually to say, okay, you've got a great question. Now that you've raised the question, you have the responsibility to figure out an answer. Let's talk about that further, right? So we're calling them to a higher level of faithing that actually challenges them to answer the very questions that they're raising, which are not easy, which right. can be very scary for all of us, but that's what it means to be a church community.
I sat in a meeting last week with the top leadership of our church, mm-hmm. and we debated doing a series for our church, a weekend teaching series, mm-hmm. on topics that a 20-something staff member brought to us and said, my generation is leaving mm-hmm. the church unless you'll talk about these issues, and they were yeah. all the issues you just brought up. Yep. Every single one you brought up. What are we going to say? How do you talk about these? You know, in a yeah. way that we can take positions or dialogue. I mean, it yeah. didn't get ugly, but it was like, this right. is not an easy decision.
It because right. it can go into a political yeah. discussion,
sure.
and we never meant for it to
right.
go
yeah.
to that point.
Absolutely.
And the same thing happens as a parent with a 20-something-year-old.
Exactly.
You know, the funny thing that we've realized is, you know, you think when your kid hits 21, 22, yeah. and they leave the house, get married, you're done. You're yeah. not done. There's still a lot more parenting going on, and they want a relationship. And I love part of your book where you talk about warming. Warm is the new cool.
Yeah.
And explain that a little bit, because it seems like if the church is a place of warmth and the family is a place of warmth for them, you
yeah.
can have a dialogue and continue an
yeah.
adult-to-adult relationship that's really beautiful.
I love that. So I'm going to start backwards with what you said. So this idea, like, what if we could reimagine the relationship with young people have with the church and young people have with parents as an ongoing dialogue conversation rather than, like, it's all the eggs are in one basket and we've got to nail it on a Sunday morning or in a one talk. Like,
yeah.
that's never going to work. So we have to hang in there over a long period of time. That's what it means to be family. That's what it means to be community.
Community, all right.
Yeah. This idea of warmth is really interesting. It's it comes out of some of the research that we did, but also others, that this idea of institutional warmth, but also family warmth, has this incredible way of helping young people actually be open to and receiving the faith that's being passed on from the previous generation. When the relationship is cold, if it's harsh, if it's distant, the chances are that that the faith won't be passed along as well because there's an incongruency. But when there's warmth, acceptance, love, expression, generosity, that there seems to be something that actually helps that be better. So that's really great to know, because I think as parents, I think sometimes we're like, well, I just want to be the cool parent, because then they'll really like me. Well, that doesn't work. Or, like, I want to be, like, the cool church, right? I guarantee at some point, ministry leaders, you will not be the cool church. It goes so fast, right? But that being cool is not what young people are looking for. I think they really are looking for the sense of warmth. And I do think that it also equates, for some of the young people that I talk with, they want to know if it's safe. Yeah. And I don't mean safe like, I'm afraid that I'm going to be crushed or anything like that. But I think they want to know, if I bring my real self here, will you bring your real self here? And can we be okay with that? Or are you going to pull a bait and switch on me as soon as I get through the door? And again, young people, especially in the world that we live in now, have been marketed to since they were born.
Yep.
So they don't need another marketing pitch. They are trying to find what's real. And man, again, come on, church. That's what we do. That's our business. Let's be real. You know, and I think, man, if we can do that, I think we can really invite the sense of warmth. And I think we can really have some really great conversations.
I mean, it's a way to think. As we wrap this up, what a great mission statement, in a sense, for a church and for a family.
Yeah.
What's your mission to be for your kids, to be warm? What do you mean? They'd want to come home to a warm home when they're 25, 30, whether they're on a mountaintop or in a valley, they feel safe and there's a place I can come and be heard and loved.
Yeah.
It's safe and I can continue to grow on my journey. That's a mission worth shooting for as a parent.
Absolutely.
And a church.
And I come back to this passage from 2 Timothy in chapter 2, because I think this applies whether you're a parent or involved in church ministry. The Lord's servant, parents, that's what you are, the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, and then patiently enduring evil. I mean, that's hard to hear, right? Correcting opponents with gentleness. And again, that correction is only at the place where you know somebody's wrong. And the fact that they have a different opinion than you doesn't necessarily mean they're wrong. It may just mean you got a different. But if they're wrong, if you correct them with gentleness, God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth so that they can come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil. But here's the point. Be gentle. Be kind. Mm. Be gracious. It's all of the characteristics you were talking about. That's the warmth that even if we disagree, somebody can walk away and say, that's a kind person. The fruit of the Spirit was present in that conversation. Love, joy, and peace and patience was a part of that, rather than it being discontentedness. And Stephen, this is helpful for all of us as we navigate our kids through this season, whether it's the teen years or the 20s. Thanks for your work on this, and thanks for the dialogue this week.
Yeah, Bob, thanks so much. It's been great to talk with you and Dave and Ann. And I just want to say, if I could, just to the parents, may you know that you are loved by God, that you have made mistakes, but the mistakes don't last forever, that no one loves their kid the way that you do, and every day is a new day. May you step into that parenting with courage and hope, knowing that you can be a positive influence in your kid's life. And I wish you God's grace and peace.
That was a benediction.
That was a good benediction. Stephen, thank you. We've got copies of Stephen's book, Growing With, written with his colleague, Kara Powell. It's in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can go to our website, familylifetoday.com, to order a copy, or you can call us to order. Our number is 1-800-FL-TODAY. So again, the website is familylifetoday.com. The book is called Growing With by Stephen Argue and Kara Powell. You can order by phone by calling 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. We have David Robbins, the president of Family Life, who's here with us. And I had to think, David, as we were talking about kids moving into the teenage years and staying connected with those kids during those years, I thought that's right where you are. You've got a son who's a teenager now, officially.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, Bob, I look at the way time is flying, and I'm sure like many listeners, I cannot believe how quickly the time is passing.
Well, the days are long, but the years are short, as we've said many times.
Yeah, no joke. Wisdom that has been said many times, and it's never more true in my own home than right now. And the idea that growing up doesn't have to mean growing apart is so important to keep in mind. And we had a Family Life listener who wrote us recently and said, I am so thankful for Family Life today. It carried me through the years with our children when they were growing up. Many times I felt alone when my decisions often ran counterculturally or even against what our kids' friends' parents were allowing. And then I would listen to Family Life today, and it would reaffirm Christ-centered values, and I would be so encouraged to keep persevering and following the Lord. And you know, Bob, today we are 2 weeks away from the start of the new year. And this month, we've been sharing comments from listeners to remind folks of the impact this program is having to so many people. Your investment, your financial support of this ministry is what will enable us to continue bringing help and hope to people throughout the coming year. This month, we receive about 60% of our funding that goes throughout the entire year. And when we get thank you notes like the one we just read, it's really our donors and our legacy partners who deserve the thanks. You are the ones standing with us and standing with us this month to make it all happen. Family Life Today would not be on the air here in this community if it weren't for people like you who invest in the work. And I just want to say thank you for standing with us.
Well, and as you said, the next 2 weeks are critical for us here at Family Life, and we're hoping listeners will take action today. Go to familylifetoday.com to make a donation online or call 1-800-358-6329 to donate. When you do, your donation is going to be matched dollar for dollar up to a total of $2.5 million, and we're grateful for the folks who have made those funds available to us. We hope to take full advantage of that matching gift, but to do so, we need to hear from you today. Donate online at familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-FL-TODAY to donate. If you are able to donate $50 or more, be sure to request your copy of the new devotional that we put together here at Family Life called The Story of Us. That's our gift to you as a thanks for your year-end donation. Again, more information's available when you donate online or call 1-800-FL-TODAY. Now, tomorrow we're going to talk about the difficult journey that many parents are on, the journey of loving a prodigal, a son or daughter who has left the faith. Judy Douglas knows what that's like, and she'll be with us to talk about it tomorrow. Hope you can join us as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.